This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
One of the sessions this morning was on outreach, and one of the speakers in that session was Dr. Rob Simpson from Oxford University, who was talking about planet hunters. And now I've managed to grab him and Chief Zookeeper Dr. Chris Dintott in the corridor. So Rob, could you tell us a bit about your talk today?
Yeah, I was talking about, we collaborated at the Zooniverse with BBC Stargazing Live, which was here. It was in Jodrell Bank. And we found an exoplanet. So we took 3 days. We had a million classifications on planethunters.org. And over 100,000 people took part. And we helped discover an exoplanet, or technically an exoplanet candidate, but a very good candidate.
We've got CAC time, hopefully, this week. There's a pesky background. We found out because we saw the transit, we saw the dip in light when the planet gets in front of its parent star, and that's what Threppleton and Holmes and their friends on Stargazing Live helped us do.
Yeah, so Lee Threppleton and Chris Holmes were the two members of the public that first spotted two of the separate transit events for this exoplanet during the 3 days of Stargazing Live.
But the trick is we need to rule out there's a pesky background star that's just close enough that could be faking the transits. If it's an eclipsing binary, if it's two stars going around each other. And so we've used UKIRP data with the help of the Kepler team, and now we need to get Keck on it, and hopefully we can turn it from a planet candidate into a proper plant. Anyway, that's what Rob was talking about.
Can we back up a sec? So planet hunters use Kepler data, is that right?
Yes, planet hunters, you're looking at light curves from Kepler. The Kepler spacecraft is staring at about 100,000 stars. Very, very sensitive instrument. So I'm always told that it could see a mosquito passing in front of a headlight, which I guess is a slightly useful analogy. But it's very, very sensitive. And if you're aligned such that the planet going around the star is between you and the star, then you'll see a slight dip in the light as the planet goes across. And those are the dips that users on the Planet Hunters website are trying to mark and find and tell us they're there.
How many have you found so far?
Planet candidates, I'm not sure what the total is now.
Candidates were well over 100. Actual planets, published ones, we've just got paper with numbers 3 and 4 is nearly accepted. I'll be talking about those tomorrow, so this is a sneak preview. And then we've got a long list of other candidates. We're finding that people are particularly good at finding weird and wonderful planets. And so we made do you remember there was that planet discovered last summer going around a binary star?
Yeah, the Tatooine.
That's the one. Yeah, absolutely. So we had an independent discovery of that, which doesn't count for anything because we weren't quick enough. But we think our users are particularly good at finding those because the presence of the two stars confuses the computer, the algorithms that the Kepler team use. And so we're just getting to the point where we can follow up on these because the patch of sky that Kepler's staring at is in Cygnus, summer constellation in the northern hemisphere, and so it's just getting to the point where you can observe it from Hawaii. And so we've got some follow-up lined up over the summer, and we hope we'll have plenty more planets soon.
And Planet Hunters is one of many Zooniverse projects. Are there any others that you'd like to talk about?
We should definitely talk about the Milky Way project.
The Milky Way project is a sort of bubble hunting, if you like the analogy. We've got Spitzer data, beautiful images of these star-forming regions all in the galactic plane of the Milky Way. And we're asking people to draw bubbles and to find other objects in that data. And they've been doing that it launched at about the same time as Planet Hunters did. So it's December 2010. And we've created astronomy's largest catalogue of infrared bubbles. So there's a talk later about that, in fact. And there's a poster up here at NAMM. This is good doing NAMM. NAMM podcasting. And the Milky Way project has moved into a sort of second phase now, where users on the site are seeing the catalogue of bubbles that they helped discover. So we've entered a sort of meta Milky Way project where people are seeing all these gorgeous bubbles and they're now taking more precise measurements so that we can do better science. And one of the things we want to get out of this is to understand how stars form. We want to know if stars trigger the formation of other stars. And we want to understand the dynamics and the properties of the interstellar medium, that beautiful nebulous material we often see in images.
The only thing I'd add is it's really cool, for me at least, because we've had Galaxy Zoo for nearly 5 years now, and that produced real scientific papers. But Planet Hunters has papers, Solar Stormwatch has papers, Milky Way Project is now producing real results. One project that hasn't yet, because we need more people's help, is the Galaxy Zoo Mergers Project.
Yes.
So this is where we're getting people to smash galaxies together on their computer and fiddle with the simulations and see if you can match an observed merger. Now, we're nearly there. We've taken a close look at 100 mergers. We've had more than 5 million simulations run on people's computers. But we're sort of in, what is this, the Christmas special of Galaxy Mergers. We've got the best of the best up against each other. And so we just relaunched the site. Don't laugh. Sorry. So we just relaunched the site, and if you want to see the most spectacular simulations of mergers and help us find the definitive ones that will go on to the grand final of being in a paper and helping us understand galaxy mergers, then we need people's help right now. And that's at mergers.galaxyzoo.org.
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, you talked about we have other projects. Zooniverse.org has all the projects listed by category. There's lots of them. You'll find mergers there and all the others, and it's well worth a look. There's far more there than most people think there.
Just before we finish, you launched a new project recently called SETI Live, which is something different, that you're actually getting live data, is that right, from the telescope?
Yeah, we didn't even, I can't believe I didn't talk about SETI. Yeah, this is live data from the Allen Telescope Array. And so it's new for us because this is literally as the data comes off the telescope and we're looking for aliens. So with Jill Tarter, who many people know, who's the inspiration behind the main character in Contact, which is a film I grew up loving, and thinking that radio astronomers listened to...
They get me started on that.
Yeah, okay, fine.
we are in Manchester, near
sure.
Central Bank. So.
But SETI, so the point is that we're looking in crowded regions of the radio spectrum where there is a lot of interference, in which the computers at SETI have never been able to sort through. But we think if we can get people in the loop live and we can get a better understanding of what's going on, we may just find a signal. Obviously, the odds are, well, astronomical. But the telescope's there, it sends its data up to the website, and if somebody marks something and it's confirmed by other users, then within 3 minutes we can get the telescope back and pointing at the signal again. It's very different from things like SETI at home, where they're mostly using archive data. So SETI Live's exciting because you might find aliens. It's exciting because it's live data. It's also exciting because this sort of live mode is, I think, where the Zooniverse is going in the next few years. There's lots of places where putting human brains in the process of collecting data is going to be very important.
Well, thank you very much, Rob and Chris. I've got to say this is a little bit weird because it feels like I'm listening in on a recycled electrons recording. It's probably what our listeners feel like when they actually meet John Custis.
Yeah, this is probably, recycled electrons is our can we make a podcast with no effort?
Maybe we can.
Maybe we can. We can't aspire to be the Jodcast, but maybe we're the extra show, the extra half hour with wine tacked on the bottom of the Jodcast. That's right, there you go.
Well, thank you very much.